You're listening to Real Talk on RCR, Reality Check Radio.
You're on Reality Check Radio, Real Talk with Rodney Hyde. It's so lovely to have you along. Remember, you can send me a text at 2057 and email me inbox at realitycheck.radio. Here's a funny thing. I'm not quite sure why I have this next guest on, but I know I'm going to love it because he sent me these wonderful emails of his analysis of local council, and they're absolutely on point. And if I went through every point that he raised, we'd be here for the next 3 weeks. And I'm talking with my guest, Mark Ankrum. Good morning, Mark.
Good morning, Rodney. Pleasure to be here, and hi to all the listeners.
Well, and you're a listener too.
Absolutely. Probably 3 or 4 times a week, usually Paul Brennan because it's most convenient, but there's a few others I love, including Tobias and his music.
And you listen live mostly or replays?
No, I'm mostly live. I do other things at the same time, but I listen very, very carefully.
I hope you listen to my show.
I do, not as regularly as Paul, I'm afraid, but I do definitely listen.
Oh, well, Paul's wonderful. Tobias is wonderful. We've got wonderful, wonderful guests, wonderful hosts. It's an amazing thing, Reality Check Radio.
Yes, I think a lot of people would be lost without it. And, you know, I think having them back on air and the hard work that VFF did was absolutely astounding. And the two as a tag team is fantastic. It really is the only reality out there in New Zealand, I think, at the moment.
Yes, and I think inch by inch, we are going to become more and more accepted in this sense that politicians and newsmakers will want to come on the show because we're getting a significant audience. And at that point, it's a huge achievement. And at the same time, we will have kept our philosophy, because there was nothing worse than during the dark times of COVID to have all our news outlets acting like Pravda and just pushing the government line and stigmatizing and demonizing anyone who had a question.
Totally agree.
We must never allow that to happen again. And of course, the legacy media, I think, are lost. They're gone.
Well, I agree. And I think the reality is starting to kick in for those of us who, in the dark times, as you call them, we thought we were just part of the 10%. But yes. When you now hear data out that says actually maybe 1.6 million Kiwis never got a jab, you're talking 35% of the population are on board.
Mm.
And that makes a huge difference to connectivity and belief that we weren't wrong.
Well, the big tell for me is that you can't get the data. It's a very, very simple thing for the health authorities to have kept the data on the status of jabbed versus unjabbed, and they're not interested. And that, to me, is absolutely damning. And, of course, that's the least of it in a way, because we've got enough seeped out through the Official Information Act requests and leaks to know that they were lying to us from the get-go.
Yeah.
I will never, ever get over it.
No, I don't think a lot of us will, in terms of changing trust in government.
Mm. Tell me, Mark, tell me about your life.
Well, I was brought up on Auckland's North Shore, went to university, didn't like it, and then ended up falling into the hospitality industry, partly by accident, but gladly I stuck with it, did a hotel management degree for 3 years in Wellington, and then spent probably the best part of the next 35 years plus traveling the world with my trade. And through a number of coincidences, I just ended up back home in early May, 2019. And my father hadn't been well. I came back with my auntie from the UK so she could see Dad. And then he passed away in July of 2019. And by the time I'd finished assisting my mum with support and cleaning up Dad's affairs, it was the end of the year. And just as I was about to start looking at going back overseas for hotel management contracts, the world fell apart. And happily, in hindsight, I was stuck here. And I can't complain. It was I couldn't have been happier being here rather than overseas with what ensued. So,
we'll get to that. But tell me about the hospitality business. So you worked in hotels. What as?
Probably the last 20 years before I came home was as general manager or number two to area managers running single properties. I did a lot of pre-opening properties, which is basically going into a situation where you're the first person on the ground and you have to work with the owners, the developers to actually put the team together, deliver brand standards and all the other corporate brainwashing that we got. And you deliver a product on brand, on time, making money for the owners and keeping the management company happy. So
that would be a lot of pressure, right?
Yeah, it's a hugely stressful process because you're trying to balance recruitment and training and new people coming on board, new relationship building. It's a big job to build relationships amongst your team as well as keep a relationship with an owner who might be under pressure for funds to finish off the building. And because you're the person on the spot, you are required to be at the forefront of checking what's being built that's meeting your management company's brand standards. So it's quite dynamic.
Yeah. And were you, like, was it a single owner hotel, like they had one hotel, or were you working for chains, or did you do everything? Like, was it like the Sheraton or Regis or whatever it is that they have hotels through the world?
Yeah. So I started off my career with the parent company of Sheraton. It was actually at the Sheraton Auckland Hotel and Towers, which is now the Langham, and then moved to a couple of other smaller companies, got back with Sheraton, which then morphed into Starwood Hotels and Resorts, which owns Western, Sheraton, the St. Regis, W Hotels, and that then got sucked into Marriott. So primarily I've only worked for two companies. I worked for Starwood and the Sheraton Heritage companies for, I think, 20 years, and the rest has been with Hilton in the middle, in Asia. And then I went back to working for Marriott in the St. Regis brand because they bought Starwood in the Middle East.
And I imagine it's an exciting life because you're traveling the world, you're living in different countries, and hotels to me are like airports. They're exciting places.
They are, but sometimes I would be honest and say they can be overstimulating in terms of
about to say that next.
Yeah, because they're very vibrant places, particularly if you're busy and in non-COVID times. They're fantastic fun because you get to meet some very interesting people of every nationality and diversity, and you get the same with your staff, and you have a really busy time. But if you're in a situation where you're living in the hotel, which I was in quite a few situations, it's a 24/7, you can't escape from it, whether it's guests or staff. So
you must have some bloody funny stories.
I've got two. I think I should be writing a book because some of them are pretty shocking and some of them are just hilarious. But
yeah,
Yes, most definitely.
Because even I stayed in a lot of hotels, and I've got funny stories, like, and that's just a microcosm of my own personal experience. But if you're the manager or the 2IC, you're actually right across what's happening in every room and the trouble that people are having.
Sure. And you've got access to the CCTV tape.
Yes.
What happens at night?
I imagine you've got some good ones on me.
No.
Because wow. When you think about it, oh, my goodness, people slipping down the aisle and hopping into a room that they're not supposed to be in. It must also be, I don't know how to put this politely to you, but it must also be a bit of a rock and roll lifestyle living in the hotel, because I imagine there's alcohol, sex, and drugs in the industry.
Well, I think no, because if you're living in a hotel and running it, you're under the microscope every minute of the day.
Okay.
So I gave up alcohol when I lived in the Middle East, because seeing the people who abused it there, who were mostly expats on big salaries, expecting you to join in, and I just couldn't be bothered. So actually, it was easier just to say I didn't drink, and by default, I stopped drinking. But no, I think there are some general managers who have got sucked into that lifestyle of rock and roll lifestyle, because you can lead a lifestyle which can take you down that side of things. But the reality is, if you want your staff to respect and trust you, and they do watch every move you make. You've got housekeeping servicing your room. You've got room service delivering. You're in the restaurants. You're in the public areas as well as back of house. You can't afford to do it.
Mm.
So
I stopped drinking in 2002 or thereabouts, just by accident. And I completely lost, because I found the political lifestyle, you drink too much. And then I lost the taste and don't particularly like it. Sometimes I have a cold beer, but I never enjoy it. I can't usually finish a glass, but I think, oh, a cold beer would be nice. And I like the first sip, but that's it.
Yep.
I don't like wine. I think alcohol's poison.
It is.
And I've never done drugs. I might have pretended to puff on a marijuana cigarette at some party or another, but not really. Drugs have never interested me. And so I understand. And of course, it's another thing that people don't appreciate, that if you're managing a team and you've got serious responsibilities, you're not going to last.
No, well, I mean, I was recruiting teams of up to 700-800 people in China and the Middle East, and you don't have the option except to go the straight and narrow, even if you did have the temptation.
Yeah. You've got quite a remarkable skill set then that wouldn't be a common skill set in New Zealand, just because of those setting up those hotels. That's like an international person being brought in to set it up, and you would be a very valuable bird to these hotel chains anywhere in the world.
Well, yes and no. The fact I'm, my vaccination status doesn't help, because believe it or not, it's a question that's raised even in New Zealand quite regularly.
Wow.
Because a lot of the ownership of New Zealand hotels is foreign, particularly Singapore, China, Malaysia, and a couple in Australia, such as, well, I won't name the companies, but it's a regularly asked question, and I've been knocked back by multiple companies in New Zealand as well as overseas because of that.
And you had a vaccine hesitancy from an experience well before COVID.
That's correct.
Tell us about that.
Well, I negotiated a new contract to go to China, and China has one of the most stringent requirements of all foreigners. I mean, So I actually had to have 5 vaccinations or boosters on previous vaccinations, and ended up having, I think, 5 in 3 days, including 2 double shots, which definitely had an impact on me, both respiratory and heart palpitations and fatigue, and really didn't get too much response from the doctors at that time. But I think it's led to other challenges in later life that I'm aware of, which is why I'm quite happy that I don't drink anymore. But I'm pretty sure that I did get injured just because of the overload in such a short period. But in those days, nobody really talked about it.
And this was back in 2009 or so, 2010.
Yes, I think it would have been 2010. And also I'd found out by a little bit of default from my aunt in the UK, who said that my father had nearly passed away in his late teens or early 20s when he'd had vaccinations. But I'm not sure what that would have been in the 50s. Might have been polio, might have been TB, something like that. But he'd become awfully ill and was hospitalized for quite a while.
And when you back then went to the doctor and said, not feeling great, what was their attitude?
They didn't think it was of great concern and said, it's not unusual that you won't feel right for a couple of days. Might be anxiety, sleep it off, and no follow-up. So I ended up getting on a plane 10 days later to China. I felt better, and I think I would say I'd recovered, but I don't know what other damage it might have done to me.
Hard to believe we're doing this to little kids, isn't it?
Yeah.
Little babies.
It's not right, especially as they don't need it, according to all of the data that we hear from multiple reliable sources.
Roll on to coming back to New Zealand.
Yes.
Your dad had passed away.
Yes.
You were looking after your mum.
Yeah.
COVID hit.
That's correct.
And what'd you make of that?
Well, you know, my instant reaction was, we need to look after my mother because she's in her 80s. And so most of it was just battening down the hatches around family. And also talking to a lot of friends in the UK and the States where I'd worked before, that so I could understand what they were getting information on. And it was, I guess, where I started to really be concerned was just understanding that it was absolute lockstep information across the Western world. Friends in the US and the UK and Aussie were saying exactly the same thing that we were hearing. And I think I've always been quite cynical and quite questioning. So when I heard some of the messaging coming out of Ministry of Health and other parliamentary announcements, I just didn't quite take the bait, quite weary, and resisted all the requests to come and get vaccinated that came rolling in, particularly if you're over 50. I really just bided my time despite being hassled by the local doctors. So my mother went along and had every vaccination, couldn't talk her out of it. And in the end, my sister did actually get vaccinated because at that stage we'd agreed that my sister would be available to look after my mother. And because of where my mother lived, we had no choice. Someone had to get vaccinated. So my sister took the bullet on that one. But she's never had any more. She took the minimum and she realized pretty fast what was ensuing. So.
Took off up north.
Yes. Well, after the first series of lockdowns and listening to the single source of truth, I decided that there were
Was that a deliberate? Yeah. I hadn't heard that before. That's very good. The single source of truth. That's very funny. The more I think about it, the funnier it becomes, because you can picture her and I think the single source of tooth. Oh, my goodness.
It's not her fault, but there was a lot of them. But no, I think I just thought I'm a bit stuck. I'm a bit stuck for getting a job in a hotel. I had limited funds, but enough to buy a smaller place outright. And so I really just looked for somewhere that was a little bit out of the way and quieter and rural. And without probably knowing it, I've picked an area in the country that was pretty rebellious in terms of taking and following the narrative. Because most of the west side of Northland is a bit rebellious. There's a lot of Māori that don't believe in the government or the health system, and there's a lot of non-Māori who are also similarly disaffected and quite happy to just get on and lead their own little community lifestyle. So it suited me very well. I bought a dilapidated old Kauri villa that I'm still in progress to refurbish on a piece of land that has about 60 fruit trees and some great veggie gardens. So I'm not self-sufficient, but I spend about $50 a week maximum at the supermarket, and that's it.
Isn't that amazing? Good for you.
Thank you.
Have you got hens?
They're coming this summer. I'm actually just building. I've got enough space for hens and ducks, but nothing any bigger.
Well, I was terrified of hens, but my daughter's got hens, and I actually adore them now. And I've been in my hen house today fixing up a new feeder and water system that I
did a
DIY on. And I can't imagine now being without hens, because they're amazing creatures, because they just lay
these
beautiful, beautiful eggs. And like we always – I feel as though with hens you could survive – tough times because you've got eggs, if you know what I mean.
You got eggs, and if you can bring yourself to eat them at a certain time, you've got chicken meat.
Yes. Well, we've got a lot of rabbits. So yep. My next thing is to learn how to shoot and butcher rabbits.
And rabbit meat's fantastic.
Make stew. Now, you're up there and we've got the COVID nonsense. And then you've taken a keen interest in the council, the Kaipara District Council. Tell us about that.
Yeah, and again, I've always been interested in politics, but not politically deep.
Because we met, you tell me.
Yes, we met once when you came to an event at the convention centre at Sky City, and
what was the event?
I actually can't remember, but I do remember meeting you outside what was then the Sky City Grand and taking you up the long escalators up to a big event, because I think you must have been one of the key speakers or guests.
Oh, I do have a memory of going there and speaking at something.
Yeah, but I can't recall what it was, but it was a pretty big event. I mean, it was in the top hall, which used to take a couple of thousand, so must have been a lot of people. Waiting to hear you speak, Rodney.
Tell me this, and you can be blunt, because I've pondered this. Was I a reasonable sort of person then?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I used to see you on the media a lot. But yeah, I think once you get into the machine, your life changes. I've seen that with politicians everywhere. But no, I think the good politicians are the ones that still manage to keep it together and have a connection back to the real world.
I always felt I did, but then you sometimes wonder if, you know, how your mind can play tricks. And of course, you get so busy.
Yes.
And you actually run out of energy.
Yeah.
To be always nice, if you know what I mean. You would have that in hospitality.
100%. Even on the hardest days when you've had 4 hours sleep, or you're in the middle of budget season and you've got somebody complaining at reception who wants to see you, you've still got to go and put on your best face and listen attentively, be empathetic, and do the best you can in the situation. I think politicians are not that different.
Yeah. Oh, well, that's pleasing. Tell me about the council. You got interested in politics and you got into this council business.
Probably after the initial 6 months, because I moved here probably late 2020. So the first 6 months were full steam ahead, cleaning up the property and getting things sorted with what I wanted to do. And then as winter approached and I had less time to work, I thought, well, go along to your local council meeting and actually start having a look at what's going on. And this was probably just before I joined VFF. So I started going to council meetings and realizing I was quite often the only member of the public watching. And nobody was probably online, because they do broadcast them on YouTube, but you used to get on those and see there were two other people there. So I was just fascinated to understand the process, but it was more for me an exercise in understanding a bit more about my new community and some of the players. You start to see who comes to present on what topics and what are issues in your area. And as our local newspaper is a privately owned, constricted agenda newspaper, you got more information from the council or just talking to people. And through a number of different connections from VFF and other, I was approached to assist a councillor with what was then could only be termed a slightly fixed disciplinary issue. And I was called in to be an independent observer as she met with a number of people with this issue. So I got to understand another side of it. And I just kept listening and understanding, and then I started sending them emails and sending requests for Lagoimas to try and find out information that was clearly not being discussed at meetings. And you can understand that, you know, the council agendas are usually preordained, and you don't get to see the background on them sometimes until late evening, the day before the meeting, and they can be hundreds, if not thousands, of pages long with addendums and all sorts. So to really understand what they're discussing and voting on and what might be a 10, 15-minute window, they're actors. They are acting. They've already decided what it is, and they're acting for the camera. So
Lagoimas are the local government official information act request, which puts an obligation on the council, if you ask them for something, to supply it unless they have good reason not to, which is statutory reason. So that's what a Laguma is, right?
That's correct. The Lagoima, they are usually, you're notified when you've got to be very succinct as to what your questions are, or you will get rubbish back. So you've got to be quite careful how you ask them. It's a money-making scheme for the council, because probably 60% of those I've requested, they've turned around and said, no problem, the first hour's free, but the burden of this will be 12 hours, which we're going to charge you at $73 per hour, plus GST. So
do you pay that?
I don't know. I either twist their arm and tell them it should be in your yearly P&L or budget or this document or that document, and I haven't had to pay for one yet.
Good, because that's absolute bullshit.
Yes, it is, but it's how they put people off for asking information. So you've got to be smart about what you ask for. And
by sitting in on the meetings, you will have a good idea of what there is and what you need.
Yes, because then you are in some way forced to review a lot of the council agendas once they're posted. And whilst you might not read 1,000 pages before the meeting, you can get to the important bits later.
When you're in the meeting, do they occasionally kick you out and go private?
Oh, there's always a break before they go into what they call PEX or publicly excluded session. The last council prior to, which was 2018 to 2022, actually used to have private meetings prior to the start of the official council meeting or briefing, and then they would have a further session after that. So the public were always excluded until they were ready. So they did prep work before the meetings, which was, I think, sometimes to align people on voting. And this council does a lot of offline meetings and discussions, but they do a lot. The workshops are the most dangerous. They're the where they have private briefings on certain topics that are not publicly attended. So workshops
scary. Are dangerous. My observation of council, I've never been on a council, is all the power rests with the chief executive, because the chief executive controls the flow of information to the council. The council officers have to work through the chief executive, so he's the gatekeeper going back the other way.
That's correct.
So he or she is the interface between the elected members and the staff. That, unlike a central government cabinet, there is no contesting of advice. So while when you're in cabinet, there's a sort of monolithic aspect to government, there's also departments critical and providing critical feedback on each other. So yes. Treasury will give the once over any paper that comes your way. The Prime Minister's office will give it a going over. The Ministry of Justice will give things a quick over. Now, obviously, that's limited because they're all in the one system. But ministers have their own departments advising them. They can be asking questions about other ministers' portfolios and what do people think. So there's a bit more of a robust contest. Not perfect, but there is something. But when you're in a council, the chief executive has such enormous power. And then I notice that they form a close relationship with the mayor. And they know that the mayor's extremely busy, and they basically cut a deal with the mayor where you scratch my back, I'll scratch yours. And the mayor and the chief executive regard the council as a bit of a nuisance and a thing to get stuff passed. And they work hand in glove together. Is that a reasonable description?
From my observations of Kaipara District Council and also Northland Regional Council that I've been involved in, primarily, yes. All the auditing and checking that you mentioned occurs between government departments is certainly not done in local council. I mean, I think I've listened to Jaspreet when she did some awesome blogs on local government, and she's really got a much deeper handle than I do. But locally, absolutely. And if you've got a chief executive chief executive and a mayor who are aligned rather than challenging each other, it's even more dangerous, because your mayor is the only full-time employee of the district. The councillors are theoretically only supposed to do around 60 hours a month. But the reality is they do a lot more than that. They're only rewarded for that. But the chief executive, who are on the big $300,000, $400,000 salaries, rule the roost.
They've got all the staff.
And the consultants, and that's where I think also most councils have deferred a lot of their research and difficult decision-making to consultants, whether it's a special commission or special interest lawyers, that's where it all comes from.
And if you want to survive in local body politics, you stay at the council level and nothing's particularly your responsibility.
Correct.
You'd be an extremely affable person walking around your local ward.
Yep.
Saying to everyone, you know, good to see you, Mark. How are the kids going? Yada, yada, yada. See you next Saturday at the sports field. Got a problem? Oh, yeah. No, I'll look into that. Oh, look, I've had a look into that. That's what they're saying, you know. I don't know. And you go along to the council and you nod your way, sleep your way, doze your way through the meetings and the workshop. Vote as the mayor suggests.
Yes, and I think, again, I won't mention any names, otherwise I'll be had for libel, but under our previous council from 18 to 22, there was a distinct odour of fixing on a lot of the decision-making, and a lot of that was primarily done by a fair number of the then council who had other political aspirations that they were utilising. They were a mixture of National and Labour supporters and Green supporters, but they were all aligned supporting whatever the government of that time wanted because they wanted to play ball to keep on side with all the powers that be.
Now, I want to get on to some specifics.
Yes.
And I just want to read for listeners your email. And you sent this on the 3rd of August. And you said, afternoon, council team. Whatever the financial challenges of the KDC, which is the Kuiper District Council, or your personal aspirations to, quote, leave a legacy, you're all again being sucked into the machine and letting the council team run amok. I have communicated numerous times previously that you do not have to demand these ridiculous rate increases that no one can afford. Inflation dropping, unemployment going up, and you're asking for a 20% increase. Hugely disappointing. Lost the plot and no sense of reality. Your organization's financial management and rates demands are bordering on insanity.
Yes.
And then you get into the detail. That's a strong email.
Yeah, well, I call quite a few of them and have the same discussion with them.
You must have a bit of a hide of a rhinoceros.
No, I don't think so. Our current mayor does, and he's actually not a bad guy. But no, I think my frustration, honestly, Rodney, apart from the astronomical increases, because you'll read further on that the compounded rates increases for my small property in, you know, a pretty normal standard rural village. In 6 years from when I moved in here, I'm from 2020 till the 2026-27 year, I'm looking at a compound rate increase of 140% and 62% thanks to what the current council are doing. So
let me understand that number. 140% increase since when?
Since 2020-21 to 2026-27. So I paid $480 a quarter when I first came in. That will be up to over $1,200 per quarter by 2026.
Jeepers creepers.
So it's...
I mean, that's French Revolution sort of numbers, isn't it?
Well, it's happened in Kuiper before. It happened in Mongafai over the wastewater system debacle that went on.
That's
there.
Right. I was in Parliament when that happened, and I remember there was a huge revolt. And
yes.
And they built this, no one could get the numbers. They built this waste management thing that was astronomically priced. And didn't they bankrupt the district?
I don't know. There's a gentleman in Mongafai who brought many actions against the council and worked a retired lawyer who worked tirelessly to do this. But I'm not sure that they were bankrupted, but essentially their debt after that debacle went through the roof, and the entire district, including those not in Mongafai, have probably had to foot some of the interest rates on that debt. The last two councils have done a reasonable job of reducing it.
I think the council was sacked over it and the commissioners were brought in or something.
That's correct. A commission was introduced for, I think, originally it was only supposed to be for the remainder of that term, but they ended up staying for the next triennium as well, before the new council was actually allowed to be formed in 2018.
How on earth, $400 a quarter to $1,200 a quarter in 5 or 6 years?
That's correct. Well, I can only, when you look at the big picture financially of what the council does, they have doubled their headcount in less than 5 years to where we are now. And a lot of that was to do with legislation or changes with the then Labor government under Ardern, because they were creating
the single source of tooth.
Yep. Because they
were. I'm going to use that. I'm going to use that forever.
You're welcome.
Can I borrow that? I'll say, Mark, as Mark Antrim would say, the single source of tooth.
Yes.
It's terrible to be personal, but you can make exceptions when it's incredibly humorous and when it's Jacinda Ardern.
Yes, you can. But no, I think one way or another, we're still paying off debt from that debacle back in the 2008 to 2012. But they're still driving the district, particularly Mongafai and Dargaville, to a smaller stage into big property developments without really charging developers satisfactory amounts to create infrastructure. And that was really the key issue in Mongafai. But I think financially they're out of control and nobody wants – it's the elephant in the room and they don't want to deal with it. They have extra headcount increased 100%, and on top of that, their consultant fees are through the roof. So
it's again, and, of course, the difficulty with rates – is it's on your land or capital value, and you don't necessarily have an income that can support the increasing payment.
No, well, there have been, to give you a couple of, at the other end of the scale from where I live in a moderately priced area of the district, some of the areas in Mongafai under the last valuation, which was done last year, that's obviously impacting rates, had land values increase from in the mid 500s-600s up to 4-5 million.
No.
Seriously, there are two or three developments there that are off the dial. So some people in Mongafai had bills in the $15,000-$20,000 range from 4-5-6.
And of course, the council says, oh, well, you should be happy because your property's gone so much up in value. And you're sitting there saying, it's the same bloody property.
Correct.
That I was living in 5 years ago. Nothing has changed in terms of my circumstance.
No.
My income, because I'm a pensioner or because, you know, I'm a wage or because I've got a business, my income is exactly what it was 4 or 5 years ago.
That's correct.
And here are you bastards, sorry, but they are.
Yep.
Putting up my rates like that and telling me I should be thankful because my capital and land value's gone up. They're thieves. They're dirty, filthy thieves. And, of course, if you can't pay, they will sell you up.
Yes, and that is the fear and why. I mean, firstly, I think 95% of the population are honestly just too busy getting on, looking after their family, their work, their business, whatever. They really don't have time to dig deeply into what the rate structure is and how it's made up. And secondly, they just don't have the time to complain or don't know how to. And you've got to do a lot of digging to understand where it comes from before you can make comment. But if I give you a personal example, QV decided that my land value was going to increase 123% at the last valuation. And at the same time, despite the fact I've spent a considerable amount of money upgrading the land, the buildings and the house, they wanted to reduce the value of the improvements by 12%. So in this district, land value is the calculating ratio for your rates. So for a 123% increase on the land value, you're going to get stung automatically. And when you look back historically, it's a pattern. Every 3 years, your house is revalued. Your rates go up an astronomical amount of money. They say they're not going to go up the next two, but they do. So it's a perpetuating cycle of untenable, unviable expense that sooner or later, everyone's going to lose their land or there will be a massive revolt. But it's
got, and of course, it's gone on this headcount, and the organization just loves, it's that bureaucracy. It's like a parasitic organism that's feeding on you, getting bigger and bigger and bigger until it kills you.
Absolutely. Well, my personal opinion of how I've seen local government New Zealand and the local government financial authority work in with council team members, not councillors, is that essentially they are a single corporation and people don't get fired unless they've done something illegal or very bad. They just pop up on another council somewhere else around the country. So
I would like to read a bit more of your email. I love it, right? Because we want to, I had a dear friend who, I don't even know how I met him. He wrote to me out of the blue. He got my address from somewhere, and he was coming to New Zealand. And his name was Hal Aberley. Right. And he was actually a bomber pilot in World War II.
Wow.
And he stayed in the Air Force and was part of the, I can't remember, I think it was called the Strategic Air Command.
Yes.
And he flew those planes that were on round-the-clock rotation.
Yes.
Carrying nuclear bombs.
Wow.
In the 50s and 60s. And he retired, and his thing was to go to Air Force museums.
Right.
And he came to New Zealand specifically to go surfing and to visit the Wigram Air Force Museum in Christchurch. Yes. And I took him to it, and he regarded it as one of the best museums he'd been to. And then I took him out to the beach, and, you know, he was an old man. You know, this is in the 90s.
Yes.
80s, and he went surfing, which was a hoot to me. And then he used to write to me regularly. He used to write me these lovely letters. They were always very funny in longhand. And so he said, if you ever come to, gosh, I'm trying to think where he lived, you know, you got to come and see me. And I did. And his thing, and I went along with him, his thing was to sit in the local government every meeting and document, like you have, all their nonsense. And he'd write a newsletter. And that was his sort of retirement thing. And it was fantastic because he was like the court reporter, but he was reporting on behalf of the poor ratepayers as a retired person who had the time to go and do it.
Yes.
And this is what you've done with your email, which is why I love it so much. I actually love it.
I'm cheeky with some of the comments I make, but they are all based on facts and data that I've researched either at meetings or through minutes or documents, if I'm lucky enough to get my hands on them.
I want to read for listeners this and have you comment. And you sent me another long email, which I could read out to much profit. And now I see a $327 parks and libraries combined annual targeted rate, a 45% increase on the previous version, and a 100% increase on 2023-24 exclamation mark. Never use any of the parks in Dargaville or surrounds, as most are too dangerous to be in, read dogs and the local knobheads that use them. Hope you're not planning to use this for behind-the-scenes plans for expanding Sportsville. Libraries are poor in selection and facility and infiltrated with twisted reading agendas for kids and young adults, books that are worth reading not being available to chronic censorship, will not be paying this rate. That's exactly how I feel, but I've never put it down and sent it to my jolly council. My library, I can't leave my kids in the library without supervision.
I go there once a month just to see out of interest. There are some very lovely librarians who work there, some who may not understand the big picture of what goes on. Our libraries are not spectacular, but they do perform a great function, but they have been infiltrated, for sure.
By hypersexualizing kids, gender theory, which is all on display, and your kids pick up a book or a recommended book, and it's about how they could be a girl.
Yes.
And you're thinking, libraries used to be such lovely places for kids to sit in the afternoon and read a book. I can't let them go in there. They come home with these Inside Out, which is a radical gender theory, bookmarks and stuff. And you want to rip heads off because you're thinking, what are you doing to our children? And here you are getting whacked with these rates and having to pay for it.
Well, there have been a lot of game playing gone on with the last council and this council as to how they were going to fund what they called community hubs, as well as libraries that were being used for minority interest benefit. But I think, you know, I've got a very open mind. I've lived in many places in the world. I've worked with hugely diverse groups of people.
Of course, and a lot of gays.
But every library in the country, I guarantee you, has got rainbow branding, subtly, but it's there. And whilst I don't disagree with people that wish to have a different lifestyle, I don't believe that libraries that are highly utilised by younger members of the public should be the place to do that.
Tell me about the knobheads.
Oh, it's just people with very dangerous dogs, a lot of violence against kids by kids. It rears its ugly head quite regularly, but I think I live in a rural area. My garden is my park. And I already have a couple of 3,000-4,000 books. That's my library. And if I've missed anything, I go online. So for me, a poorly stocked, infiltrated library is not a place I wish to contribute to any further, and the parks aren't relevant to people outside the townships. But,
and what's Sportsville?
Okay, so Sportsville was a community-funded entity that was built around the local rugby park, Harding Park, in Dargaville. It's a fantastic facility that's used by all sports codes, as well as special interests such as Bridge Club and other meetings. The council, I think, might have, but they're looking at, and I remember this from a Jaspreet talk, about unnecessary, unwanted sports or other public facilities that are always forced upon the taxpayer or ratepayer. And that's why I'm concerned that they have a specialist, a sports consultant who's in there doing consultancy work amongst the local population to see if they want to expand it. But the expansion's always at the expense of ratepayers who don't necessarily utilise the facility. So it's a, you know, there's a lot of big rental market in Dargaville. And there's people, I just think it's not valuable to the size of the community. And they use a lot of population projections that I don't believe are correct. Because I did a bit of infiltrating as well, Rodney. I actually was fascinated by the census process and how they were setting up the last one. So I went and worked and did the census last time, and it allowed me to travel to almost every area of the district. From Waipoa Forest to the bottom of Potu Peninsula to Tangatororia and further
afield. You were the guy down here that I was hiding from.
No, well, there was a trick. You only had to fill in three questions if you were non-Maori and four if you were Maori, but we were only allowed to tell that to Maori people.
You don't have to fill it all out.
No. I mean, it was invasive. I actually did the same
with my gender stuff. When they asked me that gender stuff, I threw it in the bin.
It was four, I think it was it 6 pages long? And I reckon it was 5.5 pages long.
Too long.
Too long.
No bugger them. So you did that, and why did you do that? Tell me, sorry, you were behind enemy lines.
Yeah, at the time I didn't have anything to do and I was a bit bored and I thought, oh, I'll apply for this. So I applied for it just as a collector, but within 6 weeks I was promoted to the team leader for the West Kaipara because the previous two people had left with disagreements. But I wanted to understand the process because a lot of what happens in census relates directly to Maori seats in Parliament. It relates... Yes. To Maori wards and other ward by default of the mesh blocks, which is what they term the population density, defines where the definition of boundaries are and also how many wards you're allowed. So I was fascinated by the statistics, but I wanted to understand. But what I learned really was that the entire focus of the 2023 census was increasing the Maori population headcount to allow them to battle for increased Maori wards or increased Maori seats in Parliament. And it failed because despite stats, and you'll see this, it'll come out soon, despite the fact a lot of the census data indicates a huge increase in the Maori population, it doesn't. It's a fiddle. They've basically got tribal affiliation. But that doesn't necessarily mean that those people wish to be identified as potential Maori ward members. So it's the whole thing was focused on Maori males, but Maori in general, followed by Pacifica, followed by the rest of us. And then secondly, it was focused primarily on Maori males between the ages of 18 and 35, which are the worst responding group in our community.
Isn't it depressing? I want to read on with your email, so thank you for
that. Sir, I'll shut up.
No, you're talking through me. Nor the CCTV targeted rate for the pleasure of the Dargaville Community Development Board holding an undeclared slush fund that is not audited, not available to public to view, collecting interest unfairly, and for police to monitor us and our vehicles. We already pay taxes for the police. The CCTV scam, championed by councillors with undeclared conflict of interest, is now referred to the Ombudsman.
Correct.
Well, I love this one. We had Dave Dyack from the other end of New Zealand, Winton, just north of Invercargill.
I know Dave Dyack. I've seen his posts on Facebook. He's an avid poster on the multiple topics.
Well, he's fabulous. And like you, we all have to get down on our knees and say, all hail to Jaspreet.
Yes, absolutely.
I was told by Don Nicholson, who was the most amazing president of Federated Farmers that I ever met, when he was president, it didn't matter what little meeting you'd go to in the middle of what not, there would be the president. Don was just a grassroots man through and through, and he had the issues at his fingertips. He did the work. He was a hard-working president, and they had to get rid of him. Why? Because he was advocating for farmers out in the sticks who were doing the farming, and he didn't buy into the Wellington system. I love Don Nicholson. And Don Nicholson visited me, and he says, there's this lady. She's astonishing. You have to meet her. And that's when I met Jaspreet.
Yes.
She is amazing.
And she is a farmer, correct?
She's a dairy farmer. She's
that's right.
Her and her husband come from where is it where the Sikhs live? Punjab. The Punjabs, and she says in the Punjab you're either a farmer or a soldier. Her father was a commander.
That's
in
right.
The army. Her brother was in the army. She and her husband had very senior positions in the bank.
Yes.
And they left to come to New Zealand. And they're now, I think you'd say share milkers, I guess, but they learned how to milk cows and they milk a huge herd. She homeschools her children. She's right across everything that the New Zealand government and these local councils are up to. And she's elected a councillor and she's
That's
on RCR. She is a super brain.
Yeah, and I don't know how she finds time to pack it all in.
I don't know how she does it. And I had the great pleasure of meeting her family and her father and mother.
Right. But she's tremendous. And she helped
She is
me.
Tremendous.
I listened to quite a lot of her written as well as video blogs, and she did them on many different topics across multiple media. But I guess my journey is a much smaller path, similar to hers, but a lot of the connectivity with what happens in local councils is manipulated on a global level through a number of associations, including ICLEI, which is big in the States and the UK, Europe and Australia, and also through the Australasian local government training departments, which coach and mentor all our local government employees.
Well, I got a snitch on Mr. David Seymour, who's the leader of the ACT Party now.
Yes.
And who I knew since he was a student. And because the wonderful Jaspreet asked him a question in a public meeting. And he described her at the meeting as a well-spoken nutter.
Yeah.
I'll never forgive him.
No, I've attended quite a few meetings that David's spoken at in Whangarei as well as other places, and I've found him to be quite obtuse with his answers on things and uses similar terminology to what you've just spoken to deflect questions that he just doesn't want to touch.
Not pleasant. Anyway, let's tell me about the CCTV targeted rate.
Well, it's the bottom line on why I've been angry about this is I've never been a big believer in excessive police monitoring.
Nope.
And I think most people with a little bit of reading would find out that they use it for all sorts of interesting things that are unnecessary. But this is a system where basically only two of the six major towns in our district has this system. Every district town obviously has CCTV in shops or businesses, schools, public council buildings. But in Dargaville and Ruawai, through various associations, they pulled it all together. They got a lot of funding, connected it to a network to the local police station. And that was fine until 2023 when the then previous mayor and his team decided to get in bed with the Dargaville Community Development Board, and they basically exhausted external funding options and they wanted the ratepayer to pay for it. So a targeted rate was initiated in 2023, and then it was expanded to Dargaville and Ruawai and charged individually to all ratepayers in the wider districts. The most recent motion to extend it another year. This is not a big charge. It's just a matter of principle for me that I think it's very wrong. But they use the argument that it benefits the entire community, but we're never allowed to really see what the results of it are. And this money, by way of a grant, and by making it a grant, it means that you can't access information on it. It's just used basically as a in case fund. So it just sits there and potentially, I don't know for a fact, but potentially is just gathering interest to the benefit of a third party, but it's all public funds.
Unbelievable.
Well, I just don't think it's right. And I say the two councillors who actually proposed and seconded the motion, one works for a major law firm in Dargaville, and the second one owns a big business and has several buildings, and are both those businesses are members of the Dargaville Community Development Board.
They didn't vote on this. They proposed it and seconded it.
That's correct, but no conflict of interest.
No.
So and this chief executive basically told me, I had a long exchange of emails with him and copied the mayor and others in, and he basically told me to forget it. It wasn't a conflict of interest. I think he likened it to, it's just the same process as if they were voting on rates increases, because they are impacted by it as well. And he completely missed my points. But anyway, I might not
The ombudsman, they're gone. They, just to be clear, they proposed and seconded for a targeted rate that would raise money that would go to the Dargaville Community Development Board upon which they sit.
Correct. Well, sorry, when I say they don't sit on it, they are members of the group.
Members of it. Got it.
Yeah. So it's and I'm not I know both the councillors, and one of them I get on very well with. He's got a good business that I've done work with. But the whole process spells of we can do this because we can, not because it's the right thing.
Well, it's an interesting one then, because I'd be interested. I'd love to see the complaint that you sent to the ombudsman.
Yeah, no, I'll happily copy you in on that.
And I'll be fascinated by that, because the members. Sorry, I thought they were on the board.
No, they're not on the decision making board. They are members.
But it is so on the nose. I know in cabinet you'd be in trouble.
Yes. Well, you've got to be very
squeaky. Caesar's wife has to be above suspicion.
100%, and that's why it's not. So it just smells of, it's the right thing to do, so we're going to do it without necessarily considering all of the options. But I just believe there are other ways to fund it, and I don't really like giving secondary support to the police when they already have taxpayer funds.
And, of course, you and I can picture where these cameras are going to end up. Correct. Because they're going to have these cameras established in our little towns and in our cities, and they will have a facial recognition, number plate recognition. They'll be using artificial intelligence, and they'll say, oh, hang on, Rodney Hyde went to town three times that week. He's only allowed to go twice.
That's correct. Welcome to 2 Minute Cities.
We'll find him.
Sure. So you've got to make a stand, because what I've learned, Rodney, over the last 5 years particularly, and I think that's a major topic of conversation, is these big changes don't happen overnight. They happen gradually over 10, 20, 30, 40, 50 years. So you've got to be aware, which is what VFF and other associations I have has made me more aware of. You've got to be aware of the small steps and speak out. And if you don't, the big step will not be far away.
I've been wrong about most things. And one of the things that I was most wrong about, and I always apologize to Bob McCoskrie of Family First, because there is a slippery slope.
Correct.
And you make one step, it seems so extraordinarily reasonable. But you slide all the way down. And CCTV cameras, to quote Stop Crime, they're the slippery slope.
Yeah, well, exactly. And I mean, I picked this up when they were combining and collating all of the network to make it a single network for Dargaville and now for Rua.
Mm.
I questioned it and said, well, you know, standard practices, a business buys it. I think they're tax deductible. Why do you need to connect them all? But so that's really what set my alarm bells ringing, thinking,
do you recall the movie Enemy of the State?
100% with Gene Hackman.
Yes. And who was the black actor? His name will come to me. I loved that movie.
Will Smith. Yep.
It was absolutely gripping and absolutely frightening.
Yes.
All that stuff now is passé.
Yeah, yeah. That's 30 years old.
They can rip your account apart. They can make you person non grata. They can online destroy you as a person.
Yep. Yeah.
Now, I want to end.
Yes.
I love what you've done. I want to end with this bit where you end your email. The entire rates process is extremely disturbing and concerning. It is economically non-viable. A shame 98% of the population are too busy working and getting on with life. They don't have the time or energy to review the rates fast and challenge the outcome. Until councils remove focus on the woke ideology of SDGs. What's SDGs? Sustainable Development Goals, sorry. DEI, we know what that is. Climate change, gender and race, it started with the Key government, hidden well, through 6 years of Ardern and Hipkins, hell, in the open, and get back to the basics of your true function, then you and we are lost. Regards, Mark. I love it.
That's kind of you.
Can you imagine if there'll be people listening? Wouldn't you want to encourage other people in other districts who've got a bit of time and are retired and are into this stuff to just go along to these meetings?
Oh, absolutely. It's
and take notes. And in a funny way, you're more powerful than a councillor.
If you are willing to do the time, and that really is the hardest thing, it's I mean, I sacrifice other things in my life to do this, but I'm glad I do it because I do bring a lot of information back to our VFF group in Dargaville as well as to other groups, because a lot of people really just don't have the time or energy to do it because it's very tiring and very boring in a way. But what you uncover at the bottom of it are real answers as to what they're doing.
Real answers. You and Dave should... And would you say you read his stuff and he's prolific? Where is he writing it?
Well, he used to post an awful lot on Facebook, but unfortunately I've been banned on Facebook for some time. I've missed a few. I've missed quite a few posts for the last few months.
What got you banned from Facebook?
Well, like a lot of things on Facebook, there are a lot of people in their organization that can make decisions without any referral.
Yeah.
Based, similar to what we heard unravel at Twitter before it became X under Musk, where control and censorship. And I did have two profiles because I did stand during the last council elections unsuccessfully, but I enjoyed the process, as well as a personal profile. And I don't know exactly. I mean, I've posted on some fairly heavy topics and been quite straightforward, but I've also toned down my language and just done more observing than posting. But it just, I don't know quite what it was, but I went to make some changes and they said, no, your account's blocked. Talk to us in 18 months. So I said, thank you, and went to X.
X is great. X, I love X. I laugh. I can be sitting there and I go on X in the morning and I can scroll through and I learn what's happening in the world.
Yes.
When I always flick over the Daily Mail, the Herald and stuff, and I look at, obviously I get Reality Check Bites, and I look at the Telegraph, and then I look at the Telegraph here in New Zealand. But of all of it, X is giving me the information, the entertainment. Some of the posts, I laugh out loud because yes, they're so great.
They're brilliant.
And, you get your people that you learn to follow. Oh, my goodness, I love it. And, of course, king of the heap is Elon Musk.
Yeah.
And when he took on Keir Starmer to Tear Keir and just went for him. And you're thinking, this is just this. They have to hate X because it's everyday people having a crack. And you find out all about Kamala and Tampon Tim. That's what I got this morning. I got this Tim Walz, who's her deputy running mate.
Yes.
And he insisted that they put tampon machines in the boys' toilets at schools.
Just and so insane.
Insane. And then they nicknamed it Tampon Tim. And I read that, and I was rolling around the floor. I couldn't stop because I thought, that's the funniest thing I've ever heard. And how do you fight being, as a politician, called Tampon?
No, but that's the level of insanity and lack of reality and just sound judgment to be politically correct has gone to the nth degree. I mean, we're lucky that we do have a mayor and a number of councillors on our current council who are quite straightforward. They all campaigned on certain topics. They've stuck to their guns 100%. They've come in for a lot of flack. They know they can't please everybody all the time, but they're actually pushing back on a lot of that garbage. I mean, they cancelled all local climate change research funding to horror from and had legal actions taken against them. They've had other councillors pull in.
Got rid of the Maori ward?
Yes. Well, yesterday that was done under some serious challenge. I mean, it was just a debacle with all the protesters trying to break into the council room, particularly when the Maori Ward Council was actually texting her followers outside as to who was speaking so they could up the noise or try and break in. And in fact, she opened the doors and let them in for karakia and protest. Just and the mayor, he warned her, I think, 9 times that he would exclude her, but he was patient and just carried on. But
that's
he's suspicious attacks against him from Dame Nada Glavish and others in the media, asking for his resignation. And she led a protest actually not long after he was elected. There was a huge protest in Dargaville, but I mean, 75% of the crowds that join in these protests are not Kaipara residents. They're all shipped in for the day.
We've got to do that another day because we're out of time. But yeah. I can foresee people being encouraged to do this. And imagine if you had a network just like Dave, Jess, Brett, and you, and it built up right around the country where there's, in each district, there's one or two people going along to the council meetings and putting up what they're finding out. Because I found your material riveting. And I couldn't be further away from Kaipara, New Zealand, if I tried. But it was just wonderfully written. It made me laugh and it made me angry, but it armed me as a ratepayer. And you could lead, you know, there literally does need to be a revolution against these guys.
Yes, but it's you're dead right. I'd be delighted to get a group going like that. Someone like
Mark, we're out of time. I've been talking to Mark Ankrum. What a guy. What sort of guy was that yours that you came up with the single source of tooth?
I think somebody else, I think one of my friends or some comedian brought that up. But
man, that's good.
I think it was a friend of mine called Diz.
Well, made my day. There you go. We've been talking to Mark Ankrum about what he's doing with the council. I love it. Going along to the public meeting, sitting in the back, taking notes, seeking information, writing it up, writing to the councillors. Imagine getting a forum where we could make that more public and you'd build and support each other. That would be a revolution in the making. When you see the sort of stuff that's going on, it makes you completely ill. And, of course, what he's been able to do is support the mayor and the councillors that are doing the good stuff against the noisy and rambunctious minority. Send us a text, 2057. Email us inbox at rallycheck.radio. Local government, out of control. Libraries, of all places, out of control.
Are you on the RCR mailing list? Never miss a beat of the news and hard-hitting stories you've come to know and love. Stay in the loop. Visit realitycheck.radio/email.